Welcome back, everybody. We are doing a doubleheader tonight. We are here on Movie Chatter covering The Tomorrow War, the latest movie to hit Amazon Prime Video, starring Chris Pratt. Let's see if I can remember the rest of the cast. Yvonne Strahovski. Is it? What's the guy's name? J.K. Simmons. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And a few others. And
Edwin Hodge and Sam Richardson.
What's that?
Edwin Hodge and Sam Richardson.
Yes. Yes. Tim joined us for Black Widow. I was kind of hoping Tim would join us for this too, because I think it would be fun to all gang up on Lou for once. Because I have a funny feeling.
I can take it. Bring it on.
Well, we're about to. So, The Tomorrow War is starts out in present day, and Chris Pratt plays a high school teacher.
High school science.
High school science teacher.
Science teacher, and kind of struggling, isn't quite where he wanted to be in his life. He has a really, really rough relationship with his father. He's married, has a young daughter, and there's a strange event at a sports game where all of a sudden a bunch of people from the future show up on the field and explain that, what is it, about 30 years, I think, in the future?
30 years, yep.
The Earth is going to be overrun with alien monsters and we're all going to die. And
pretty much.
Like, just, we don't have a chance. And so the only chance we do have, and it's a long shot, is to recruit people from the present to travel forward in time to fight in this war. So there is a mandatory draft, and they send people ahead in time for a period of 7 days to fight in the war. And if they come back, great. If they don't, well, like, most don't.
Literally the dictionary definition of cannon fodder. Like,
yeah,
pretty much.
Except there weren't really cannons. Other than that,
there
yeah,
no
literally.
Cannons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something like a 20% survival rate coming back. So Chris Pratt, obviously, is one of the people recruited and thus gets us into the movie. So we are going to talk a little bit about the movie. We're going to break it down, analyze it a little bit. I think a lot of people still haven't seen it. So unlike something like Black Widow, where, you know, by now everybody's seen it. In this case, I think we want to try to avoid like really hardcore spoilers as much as we can. If we have to, we're going to see them for the very end of the episode. But right now, we're not going to hit anything spoilery for a few minutes. We want to talk a little bit about what we thought of the film. Uh-oh. My automated assistant, whose name won't be named, apparently has some opinions on that.
Hopefully, oh, really?
She will remain quiet. That's the second time tonight while we were recording on two different competing voice assistants.
The director here,
if you'd like. Yeah, I was gonna go, I mean, well, before we get to the director and actually like breaking down stuff, let's just get out of the way our general thoughts. What did we think of the film? Lou, why don't you start?
So I enjoyed it. It was a good movie, you know, well put together. I thought it had a lot of borrowed themes and stuff we've seen before, storyline wise. So that to me didn't make me go, yeah, this is fantastic. I'm like, I feel like I've seen that before. I feel like I've seen this part before too. So that to me took a little bit away from the movie. But overall, good concept, almost a fresh story, kind of, you know. I mean, we said before, I'm always looking for a new story to follow, you know, in a movie. This one seemed a little recycled, but overall good. I think it's for an Amazon Prime thing, I think it could have been a big screen release and done well. So
we're so gonna tear you apart, Lou. I almost feel bad.
Up. Oh, I don't.
A little bit. You're only what?
What?
Oh, I thought you said my only, and then I cut you off.
No, I said thumbs up. I said thumbs
up. Oh, okay. All right. Robin, what did you think of The Tomorrow War?
I loved it.
You loved it?
I love it.
It's okay to be wrong, Robin. It's okay.
I know, and sometimes I am, but in this instance, I'm not. Lou, you are. So, so here's how we're gonna play this. I loved it because it gave me the right amount of action that that I crave so much, and a lovable main character that was real, you know, a little flawed but mm-hmm. real, and those two things put together made me like this. There's one thing I didn't like about it, which kind of harkens back to our last conversation about Black Widow, but when we get there, I'll let you know about the sentimentality of some of the longer scenes. But
okay. All right. My thoughts, basically, I loved the movie. I was surprised at mm-hmm. how good the movie was. In fact, I liked it better than Black Widow.
Oh, well, no, now, oh.
Sorry, I did.
A house divided here.
I enjoyed it more than Black Widow. Black Widow's a great movie, don't get me wrong.
Wow.
But I thought this had, as you said, Robin, the right amount of action, and not only the right amount of action, the pacing of the movie was good.
Yep.
It mm-hmm. it increased and then it fell back and gave you a break, and it increased and it fell back and gave you a break. So it was a good ratio of pacing. The action scenes, though, they put you in the characters. They weren't hard to keep up with. They weren't just all over the place. Mm-hmm. And you were invested in the action scenes because you were invested in the character going through what the character was going through. We talked many times before about, you know, you can have a lot of impressive eye candy and stuff in action scenes, but if you don't care about the character in that scene, then it doesn't matter much. And this movie did exactly that. The action scenes in the movie mattered. They had impact. They had consequence. They had relevance. They were part of the storytelling. They weren't just eye candy. So I liked that. I liked the relationships between the characters. And quite contrary to Lou's point, one of the things I liked the most about this film is the fact that we got things that were different that we don't see over and over again. I agree with Lou about wanting to see things that we don't typically get to see. That's why I liked this movie, is because we got that. So.
Okay. So I'll contradict one of your statements there, just to be really quick about this. The whole thing about the action scenes feel like they mattered and stuff, and they did for the most part, mm-hmm. until we got to the end.
Mm.
So the
very end?
Spoiling, yeah, pretty much. Without spoiling anything. I mean, we had this creature built up to be this really, you know, bad.
Badass, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Creature that is like, you know, it takes rounds from a, you know, rifle. It's, you know, it's like, you know, it's an armor on this thing. You can't hit this thing. You can't kill this thing. It takes a lot of shots to bring it down. And at the end of the movie, we got a character going toe to toe with him punching. I'm like, okay,
okay. So you're talking about that one final scene. Okay. I will give you that. Yeah. You know what?
What the hell are you trying to give me here?
You're not wrong. Not in that one case. You're wrong in a lot of other cases, which is one of the reasons I'll so easily give you that one.
It broke so much the movie for me.
That broke it for you? Really?
A lot of it did, yeah.
Yeah, see, I didn't think it didn't break it, but I will say it distracted me. There was a point where I consciously thought, wow.
I'm like, oh, God.
How is he, really, he's going to sit there and like punch it and like your fist would be shattered. Like,
I mean, there's nothing about that that works. Machine gun shooting these things from far off, and it's like, okay, they're right. Still coming at you, and he's going toe to toe with it, punching it. I'm like, okay.
It did seem a little inconsistent, but so to be fair, though, that's one little scene, and the rest of this movie was so brilliant.
I mean, overall, I enjoyed the movie overall.
Yeah,
I'm just playing devil's advocate a little bit because you guys love it so much. I'm like, okay.
I mean, to be clear, it's not the, like the best movie I've seen in ages. There are many, many movies I've seen that are far better. But this was a surprise. I did not expect it to be this good. I expected to be yet another thing that we've seen over and over again. And I was pleasantly surprised to see that it wasn't. Now, Robin, tell us about the director.
So here's what surprised me about the director and the movie. The director, Chris McKay, is known for Lego movies. So he's known for the Lego Batman movie, the Lego movie, and Robot Chicken Star Wars 3.
Yeah.
Like, okay, that guy did this.
Yeah.
And he grew up in Chicago, so, you know.
Oh, my gosh.
There he is. There it is. It's like Kenneth Branagh all over again.
I don't understand.
Oh, because you're from the, okay. Do. I was like, what's the Chicago thing got to do with anything?
What's the Chicago connection?
Mm-hmm. I remember
like
now.
You've never met me.
I remember like now, Robin.
Me. Yeah. Yeah.
I've not known you while you were in Chicago, so that, you know.
No.
Yeah, but.
So the director does these, you know, and I don't see those trappings in this movie.
Mm-hmm. No.
What I would have expected is out of this movie, if this guy had creds like, you know, Sim City or something like that, I could see that. Right in this movie, if I dreamed into this movie with those creds. But here he's taken off and done something wildly different. And in that, I'm going to have to credit probably the acting.
Okay.
I'm going to go there. I'm going to say there was some sort of, you know, cosmic whatever connection between him and his actors that he was actually able to pull some pretty decent acting, not the type of acting that, you know, we're going to go raving about as, you know, not certainly Shakespearean acting here, but there was a relationship here. He got what he needed out of his actors, and I'm kind of surprised.
But to be clear, some of that's on him too. I mean, the actors definitely deserve some credit here.
Sure.
But he did a really good job.
Again,
I'd looked at his resume before this, I would have been like, oh my gosh. Why did
they
put that much money into this guy?
What are we going to get?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
And good on him. I mean, I thought he did an incredible job. I would totally go see any of his movies in on the big screen. And frankly, I've seen the Batman Lego movie and I was unimpressed. Even for a Lego movie.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I liked the first Lego movie. It was good, but the Batman one. But yeah, so the directing in this, I don't know, this movie really just caught me by surprise. The concept was kind of a different spin on time travel. The tech that they used was kind of falling apart. It wasn't quite working right. It had very specific limitations, which, to be fair, is convenient for storytelling.
Right.
But, you know, they could travel ahead in 7 days, it pulls you back. Whether you're ready to go or not.
As long as you appear to be alive, right?
Yeah, as long as you're alive. And that's it. Like, there's no wiggle room there. You can't bounce back and forth. Mm-hmm.
You can't go back earlier than back the first time because it's a moving time frame where you're jumping from point to point that are
the
so
same
much
week.
Distance apart. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, you can't find, like,
which
the
is very
one.
Cool. And you know I like time travel stuff, so it was very cool. But the one thing that kind of brought my mind to this was like, okay, so we know when this happens. So, you know, that should have been a point earlier on that, hey, we're going to stop this before it happens because we know when it takes place.
But they cover that in the movie, though, right?
They do.
Yeah, but
they do.
At the very end.
Well, it's brought up midway through. Yeah, Robin.
So let me stop you while we're on the director, because I want to get to the plot and stuff, because I there's another little piece here, and we usually don't do this on this show, but I also looked up the producer, right? So David Ellison, and if you look at his production credits, now you know why this movie was so good with a director who let's just say, wasn't known for working with human actors, mm-hmm. right? And so David Ellison is a powerhouse out there. And with he's got acting creds, but if you look at his production creds, he's one of the founders of Skydance Media. And his production creds are Mission Impossible, Rogue Nation, Gemini Man, Terminator, Six Underground, The Old Guard, the Tomorrow War, that's Top Gun, Maverick, Mission Impossible 7. This guy's got some creds there. And if you think about those movies and overlay them with this movie, you can see how this makes sense now. Right. And I generally don't focus on producers so much because, you know, in our world, we might call them the money guys. Right. But if they're throwing money and talent towards a director who shows some promise, you know, now you've got a game.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No, and I think it shows here.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of other producers on this that have a lot of.
Yeah.
A lot of other movies in the same vein. You know, some of the other guys here have done stuff in Star Wars, and, you know, David S. Goyer's in there too. So a lot of people that have done a lot of stuff that we've all liked.
Mm. Right.
I didn't even know David S. Goyer was attached to this. He's done a lot of good stuff. Mm. Yeah. I'm a big fan of his as well.
Lou.
So to your point, Lou, about the not, you know, why don't you just go back to the point and stop it before it starts that whole kind of argument and everything. They covered it more extensively at the end. It is brought up partway through the movie, and it's kind of, yeah, we can't do that because here's why, because, you know, the tech is being held together with duct tape and chicken wire.
Right. But, and I'm not even talking about jumping to a different part. I'm talking about, okay, somebody comes back from 38 years in the future and says, hey, we're in a major war here. And here's your playbook for how you're going to stop this war from happening and win this war the second time around. I mean, it'd be like going back and saying to the Allies for World War II, here's all the key points you guys screwed up the first time around. When you get to this point in the future, you know, 20 years from now, do these things differently and you'll win the war in a matter of weeks as opposed to years. Right. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it wouldn't make for a good movie, of course, but I mean, that's where, to me, this kind of time travel falls apart a little bit, because all you had to do is give them the playbook and then wait 38 years and you're going to win this war in a heartbeat.
But Lou, don't forget, they didn't win the war. So in the future, they hadn't won the war. So the playbook wasn't complete. They had nice introductory chapters and they had enough.
Yeah, the war was almost over in the future.
And
right. But the war wasn't over. Right. And so
it was about to be.
Well, but so here's the thing, the mechanics of it, they could only go back X amount of time, like exactly at X, not X plus one, not X minus one. There's a fixed point they could go back. Okay. So they hadn't lost yet, but they were losing. And so, they could tell people everything they had done up until that point, but not what happens the next day, because the next day hadn't happened yet. Mm-hmm. So they needed to pull people forward in time so that they could try this new stuff the next day. So
okay, no, what I'm getting at is doing this in reverse, actually, not even going forward and doing that the next day, but saying kind of like old Biff going back to the, you know, past and giving young Biff the almanac, right?
Oh, and you're saying, okay, 29 and a half years from now, just have your crap together.
Exactly. You're right. Right. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
But
if you don't think about that, it makes the movie fine. But when you think about it, you're like, why don't you? I mean,
I think there's still arguments as to why that might not work, though.
Right. Because I think if they would have won the war, I think Lou would have been right. But because they didn't, they don't know the outcome. So they don't know what the right answer is. And they were struggling to get the right answer all the way up until the time they passed.
But that's effectively what they did, though. They just did it on a different scale, where you had that other thing. Oh my God, this is the fact that gives us everything we need. Let's go kick their butts now.
See, that's why. See, here's the thing. I think it's a mistake to call this a time travel film. It's technically categorized as a science fiction action film.
It's in the time travel subgenre.
It's time travel and the rom-coms. Oh my God, you guys.
There was time and they traveled through it.
And then they laughed and got and fell in love.
And then they fell in love.
But they only, it was like a point to point. It's like, no. Groundhog Day.
Point to point. Yes, that's how travel works too.
It's still time travel.
When I drive to visit you and Tim, I start at one point and I end at another point. It's a point to point travel. It just takes longer because I'm not in that subgenre.
Yeah.
So anyway, Lou, your point, it has merit. I think we could argue back and forth about it, but we need to get to the other ports. But so here's the thing. I think that it at least, so it's an interesting thought experiment. And I think that there's more to dive into there. And I like that. I like the fact that you can't just explain it away right away. And you also can't just dismiss it as, oh, well, it's broken. Right away. It's one of those things where, well, is it really broken? And then the other person's like, yeah, it's totally broken. And you're like, well, no, because of this. So there's discussion to be had there. And I like that.
I agree.
I like movies that can introduce stuff like that. And again, that's not even part of the movie. That's something that you look at and say, well, wait a minute, why didn't they do this other thing? But that's not what they like. That's tangential to the movie. So even then you're exploring this world that they presented a little bit, and that's a pretty cool thing. I'll say that I liked the way that I loved the first act of this movie. It started a little slow, but you know, he's sitting there before he gets recruited. This isn't a spoiler in his classroom. And the students are all just like completely uninterested. He's like, okay, hey, let's talk. You guys are clearly tuned out here. I'm like, why are we doing this? Like, why are we doing our homework?
What does it matter?
I'm not going to become a doctor or an astronaut or whatever. We're dead. We're just not dead yet, but it's coming. We're dead. And that is exactly the attitude that people would have if something like this were going to happen for real. He really captured the kind of the sociological and psychological aspects of what people would be going through in the present. You know, if people are talking about family members not coming back. And we're talking, you know, moms in their late 30s and stuff. We're not talking about military soldiers. And it was just, I thought it was fascinating the take on society in the present, how it's impacted by this whole draft and the knowledge that, you know, your days are finite. You know, you don't have, you know, a teenager about to graduate high school. They're not going to become senior citizens. They're dead.
So here's something that's both scary and sort of weird about this. When I first saw those kids in the classroom, and it's not a secret, education is my life. Like, this is what I do. This is my passion. I live and breathe it. I saw today's kids in a lot of those kids in that classroom, right? It's like, what does it matter? What does it matter? And, you know, so I approach educators with, you know, it's our job to counter that malaise. It's our job to, like, you know, ignite that spark, light the spark, right?
Right.
And that piece of him helped me through all of the other awkwardness, right? So for me, in a personal way, it was there. I connected with him right away, man. I was his biggest fan because of his responses to these kids. And so I like when a main character gives us short glimpses where many of us can connect. And I think in several times in the movie, he gave others an opportunity to connect with him in a different way, as a father, as a husband, as a comrade, as a a friend. Right. And so I like the Chris Pratt's portrayal of a complicated character that didn't dissolve into a trope of, you know, hero or right. martyr or right. I feel like he kept it complicated, and I really liked that.
Mm-hmm. I agree completely. He never became the, for lack of a better way of putting, I think a more modern example would be the Tom Cruise hero.
Right.
You know, where he starts right. out, he's relatable. And then by the end of the movie, he's, you know, the Tom Cruise hero. Like, he's human all the way through this movie.
Yeah.
Every moment.
I like humans. Yeah. Even though y'all don't I think I like romantic humans. I like
no,
humans.
No, you don't. Ugh. So, Lou, let's talk a little bit about the stuff. You said you feel like you've seen a lot of this stuff before. My feelings were, my gosh, there's so much here we've never seen before.
Okay. I mean, maybe it's not a lot of it that I saw before, but
there were things.
There were things. I mean, first off, the aliens with the fact that there was a different alien you were looking for, you know, i.e. the female, seemed very close to Live, Die, Repeat from, sure. you know, speaking of Tom Cruise. They're yep. looking for the alpha and there was the other okay. ones. And that seemed a bit like I've seen it before.
You could even argue like the Aliens series too, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
Any sort of a hive type of... Okay, yeah. I hadn't thought about that. That's a good point.
And this is going to be a spoiler, so I don't know if we want to talk about this now. I guess, I mean...
Yeah, I think we're about the 30-minute point. Yeah. So, yeah, we can go ahead and...
So, the other thing
spoilers
that
from here on out. We'll try to not do devastating spoilers, but yeah, we're going to talk spoilers.
So, the other thing that made me very... I got this at the end. I'm like, oh, okay, this feels very much like Prometheus. Where we have another race that had creatures on board that were maybe a weapon, maybe something else, you know, and I'm like, okay, that seemed very recycled.
You paid a lot more attention during Prometheus than anybody else I've ever spoken to, because everybody hates that movie. I actually enjoyed it, but there are a lot of parts about it I don't remember, and I didn't even remember that part of it. So kudos for that, by the way.
Well, you had the whole thing of, you know, those ships were leaving to go do devastation to other planets, yeah. and that's what, you know. So, but and that's what these things were. Maybe that was the theory, and I'm like, okay. So those are the two big things that kind of called out to me of other things I've seen before.
Okay.
But you know, otherwise,
and you pointed out too,
it was unique. The creatures were unique.
Well, you also though did make a fair point. The creatures were kind of similar to. Was it you or Tim who pointed out they kind of looked like the Rath-Tars from Star Wars?
Oh, Tim did. Yeah.
Okay, that was Tim. And then I said kind of maybe crossed with the alien from Quiet Place.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, but it's still a unique design. Unique enough.
Definitely unique, you know. And it made you frightened enough that, you know, like all through the first, you know, portion of them in the future, I'm like,
yeah,
okay, we keep seeing these spikes in the wall that, oh my god, what are we up against? And it just made you fearful.
Yeah.
And when you finally saw them, like, oh my god. And then to have the guy win the fist fight at the end, I'm like, okay,
I'll give you the fist fight thing, definitely. But yeah, I think they did a really good job of keeping the tension about the situation the people were in the future, because you're going through those different scenarios. Like every moment where you're supposed to feel afraid or you're supposed to feel anxious about what's going to happen next, you do. Like they delivered on that emotional roller coaster sort of thing.
I have one question, and I may have missed this in the movie, and if I did, please don't berate me for it. But what was the criteria for selecting a draftee?
Oh, I know.
Go ahead.
But it's going to spoil the end of the movie. Are you okay with it? I actually know the answer.
Oh yeah, they kind of went over it. They didn't explain it, but they showed it.
They explained it. No, sort of.
So
let me do this, and then I'm going to answer your question. Okay. I like that this movie had a fourth act, if you will, and Tim brought this up to me. They could have ended this movie earlier and they didn't. And I really, really, really liked that they didn't. It gave me closure, it gave me the closure that I needed. Now, to answer Lou's question, you had to have already been dead before the 30 years in order to be drafted.
That's what I thought, but I wasn't sure that was the case, because they had already talked about how they sent a lot of military guys first before they ran out of military to send, and then they started drafting. So why was there
only drafted,
differentiation? Right, but yeah, they didn't care who they sent when it was military.
Right.
Dead or not. Now it's because you have to be dead to send.
I think there was a certain humanitarian aspect of it. If you send the people who would otherwise survive, like let's say you're going to live for the next 50 years, okay? Mm-hmm. But then you send them into the future, and then they die in the future, and everybody who sticks around were the people that were going to die from like cancer 10 years later or something. Well, then there's nobody left because you killed all the viable people, and then the people who are going to die anyway are the ones that stuck around. So if they're not going to make it past that point anyway, then
you might as well send them.
Hate to put it this way, but because they're not disposable, but they wouldn't
have made it
to that point anyway.
Yep.
But I liked that they then, for lack of a better term, and folks who are in the military, please don't be upset. They dummy proofed, right, the military aspect. So they actually
as a military vet, I don't take offense to that, because that's exactly like the military people. That's exactly what you would want to do for the civilians who were in those scenarios. I don't think that's offensive at all.
So you made weapons that you could teach someone how to use in 5 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. And you gave them very specific objectives, very small objectives. Like, we're sending in 50 of you to get one vial of whatever,
right?
Like, this is, these are not complicated objectives. Not that civilians can't do that, but there's, right, they mm-hmm. down, mm-hmm. you didn't, and that lent this air of believability for me, because otherwise I would have been like, so mom down the road, you know, who's 50 years old, is getting drafted, and we're somehow to believe that, you know, she's going to be able to succeed. Well, they gave her the tools to succeed in this
somewhat
particular environment.
As best they could.
Somewhat.
As best they could.
And you had, you know, Chris Pratt's character, who was, you know, ex-special operator type thing in the military. Yeah. So he's got a background, which, you know, he retained all his skills. Obviously, he's been working out since he, you know, became a school teacher. A little bit unrealistic there, but anyways.
Schools have gym.
Yeah. But he seemed like he was like just spot on right away. Anyway.
that is true. But, and so for me, I was able to suspend disbelief continually throughout, once I really understood that. And most of the causes of death were natural. They were not in any way connected to the war. And so
you mean of the people who died in between?
Died within that 30 years, it seemed to me that they were taking folks who made bad choices or like had cancer or whatever.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, you know, another thing that I just thought about while I like the fact that you guys both wrote the fourth act thing. I thought the fourth act was really well done. It was nice that you thought you were closing down, and all of a sudden, hey, we got more story, which is really cool. Mm-hmm. But to have him go to the volcano expert, who we had foreshadowed in Act One, I'm like, really? You couldn't go to like a volcanologist, really, somewhere, call a college or university, or talk to somebody? Really, you had to go there?
The argument was nobody was listening to him. The fourth act has some plot holes.
Yeah.
The fourth act has some plot holes. Yeah. I'm glad they had the fourth act. And like you said, Robin, it brought closure. And that was really good. And I kind of see it as a bonus, almost like an epilogue. It's not really an epilogue. It's not.
Sure.
It's not. But you had a solid movie for three acts. You could have ended it there. They didn't. There's a little bit more story to tell, and you do have to get that rest of that story, because otherwise the story isn't done. But yeah, Lou, You're right. There were a few plot holes in that fourth
otherwise
act.
Otherwise, there was the Day After Tomorrow War coming out next year.
All right. But here's the thing. Now I'm going to say you needed it in order to keep this film believable. And I'm an educator. I have to believe that kids are smarter than we are. It is just a fact. You look a kindergartner in the eye and you know that kindergartner is going to take you if they want to. So I don't know. I thought it was a very nice homage to how youth are often set aside because of their lack of experience on the planet.
It worked thematically, if nothing else. But that's the thing. You had to accept some of the... There was more suspension of disbelief in the fourth act, I think, than there needed to be in some other points. Somewhat for, you know, the kid being a volcano expert. And here's the thing. During the scene early in the movie, I'm like, aha, we're coming back to that kid later on, which is fine because it's storytelling. You know, we see it all the time.
And he wasn't an expert. He just, you know, he was just well read enough to do a lot of reading.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's and that's fine. And that's all they needed, too. Like, he didn't have to understand, certain seismic survey charts and, you know, different chemical resistance factors. No, he just knew when things happened. You know, he was like a really good Wikipedia page.
Yeah.
And that's reasonable. That fits, but it kind of did feel like, oh, yeah, that kid we pointed out in Act One. Yeah, this is his scene. The melee fighting, though, was rough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It didn't break the movie, though, for me. Because the movie was
strong. Pretty close for me at the end, yeah.
Are you talking about between the dad and...
The dad and the son and the alien.
The badass alien?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And I agree. I was right there like, oh, man. End it and move on.
Are you seeing this? Yeah.
It was
cool, but the whole, you know, finding where they had to be, the snowmobile trips across the glacier, it was like... You look for a needle in a haystack, really? Really? Okay. I mean, but again, you suspend your disbelief and you buy into it and you're good to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if that's the one thing,
it was cool.
If that's the one thing in this movie that's hard to buy, the rest of the movie delivered so well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here's the thing. I'm actually going to say this out loud.
That's good, because we can't use the force, Robin. We've tried. Lou and I, we've tried.
I feel like there's a part of me for the last year and a half, sort of going on 2 years, that I've been like, all right, I'm going to lower my standards and sit on my couch and try to have some other device lift me out of my malaise that has become the pandemic. And... I didn't have to suspend as much disbelief with this as I have had to do with other things, right? Or lower my standards.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was Chris Pratt. It came recommended by others. So I went into it like wanting to watch it, and it didn't disappoint. And it sort of it is like turning a corner, right? And so even though I was sitting on my couch watching it, because I, too, am not ready to go back into theaters, it was better than what I would have seen on my small screen if these were normal times, you know? And I have to appreciate Hollywood's ability to pivot pretty quickly to take things out of big screen circulation and move them into other circulations, so that I get it, they need to make money, but also to keep audiences, you know, sort of flowing and jiving with the concept of we're going to lift you out of your reality.
Right.
And I, because the caliber of talent on the small screen that have appeared in the last year and a half has been phenomenal.
Yeah. All right. I think we're going to wrap it up here. Any final comments, final thoughts? Any major topics we missed? You guys would recommend it, I assume? Yes. Robin clearly would, and I clearly would. I think we've made that pretty apparent.
I'd recommend it. I mean, you would as well? I think it was a good movie. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Okay. Excellent.
It'll be watched again on a rainy Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
Or snowy Saturday afternoon.
I would definitely look forward to watching this again. I'm going to give it some time because there are other things I need to catch up on. But I would say this is a solid recommendation. I would say this is as solid a recommendation as probably anything else we've recommended over the last maybe year. I mean, I'm not saying it's better than the movies we've covered over the last year, but I think the scope of people who will enjoy it, I think this is a pretty reliable, yes, you should watch it. Mm-hmm.
And if memory serves, this was a Paramount movie, I think, that was supposed to be theatrical released.
Oh.
That got sold to Amazon. So it wasn't like it was produced for streaming. Okay. It was going to be a theatrical release and it got sold for, you know, probably big bucks.
Does not surprise me at all. I mean, this is totally a theatrical movie. Hands down.
Mm. Yeah, this is a Paramount.
And Chris Pratt, you mentioned before about the lovable character and the way he turns almost anything to gold. He's a great actor. He's got a good, he feels down to earth and sensible, and you know, he doesn't seem over the top. So for me, putting him in a role like this is just fantastic.
And to be fair too, this wasn't Star-Lord and this wasn't the Jurassic World character. Like it's not just the same Chris Pratt over and over again. There are aspects of it because I think he brings some of himself to his roles, but he wasn't this overly sarcastic goofball, and he wasn't quite, I mean, this was probably closer to the Jurassic World one than the other, but like, I don't think quite as cynical, maybe.
Not as cynical and not as full of himself.
That too, not as arrogant.
He was genuine.
He was humble in this one.
Yeah, and to Lou's point, and I think that, yes, there were a lot of points in this movie where I could say, ooh, I see aliens, and ooh, I see velociraptors, and ooh, I see this, right? But it never let me stay there, right? It always said, you might think you see something, which is what we do in the real world, right? We walk down the street, we think we see something, and then all of a sudden, it's something else.
All of a sudden, you're talking to your psychiatrist, you know, 6 hours later about it. And it never goes well from there. Not that I know.
But I like that about this constellation of the story. Right. And so, yes, Lou, I saw all of the echoes and memories that you did. But I also allowed the film to, you know, sort of bring me out of it. And that's what I think the fourth act did, even though I'm still going to stand by the fist fight with the alien because whatever.
No. You know, going into this recording, I did not think that it was going to be Robin I was going to be standing off against, but no, I legitimately love this movie, and I don't say that very often. The fist fight scene, though, that it again, it didn't break the movie. It wasn't the end of the world, no pun intended. But there were any of a million different directions I wish they'd taken with it instead, because it was a little bit hard to believe that that could actually happen that way. Within the confines of the reality they've established for the film, it's like, wait a minute, he can't actually do that. And yet they had him do it anyway. But anyway, again, listen, that's a minor quibble. It's an important scene, but it's a small part of a much larger film. So I think we're going to leave it at that. It's a solid recommendation. I think we're going to talk offline about what we're going to cover next week. We will probably maybe announce it in the Discord server. So we are all members of the Escape Hatch Discord server. A quick way to get an invite link to that is to go to randomchatter.com/escapehatch. And then you can join it and you can discuss all of this there with us. You can also subscribe on YouTube and hopefully like the video and maybe click the little button with the bell on it to get reminders of when we go live with new content, when we post new videos. If you go to randomchatter.com/YouTube, that will take you straight to the YouTube channel. We record most Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. That's GMT minus 4. We also record Random Chatter and Force Chatter, our Star Wars show, on Sunday nights, starting at about 8 o'clock p.m. And we would love to have you in our chat room and hanging out with us live. So that's going to do it for this episode of Movie Chatter. Thank you for hanging out with us. Go see The Tomorrow War, and we will see you again soon.